You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Multi-actor monologues, working bees, and true theater of the community. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Chandler, and you're listening to Your Program Is Your Ticket, a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. Yes, Your Program Is Your Ticket is back after a bit of a hiatus. Around September of last year, my husband David and I made the decision to move from New York City back to our home state of California. While we miss New York and all that it has to offer, we have commitments from our dear ones in California and wanted to be here to be present for those. My guest today is James Bell, business manager for the Pump House Theater, located in Auckland, New Zealand. The Pump House operates as a program venue for hire in the performing arts. It presents a diverse range of theater from plays, musicals, dance, traditional outdoor summer Shakespeare, stand-up comedy, and concerts, to psychic mediums, book launches, poetry, and play readings. It's a lot. Wow. Very cool. James is a part of my new Theater is for the World series, where I'm extending my Theater is for Everyone message to various theaters on our Big Blue Marble. Give them a chance to be heard, talk about their missions, work selections, production processes, triumphs, challenges, and misconceptions. Keep in mind that our interviews are recorded at different times to optimize schedules, just in case the audio sounds different. Also, we'll be picking up signals from around the world, just in case you hear a glitch or two. I'm super excited, so let's bring them on. Hi, James, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for being the inaugural show of my new series, Theater is for the World. Which is elaborating on my Theater is for Everyone sort of message that I have. And it's great to have the first episode be from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Super exciting. Let's start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us about your role with the Pump House Theater.
So my name's James Bell. I'm the business manager at the Pump House Theatre. That's my sort of official title. I've been there for 8.5 years, becoming up to 9 years in May. Wow. Which followed on from I've worked in the IT industry. I've worked for the government, and somehow ended up working for a theatre. Which surprisingly uses all the skills I've learned and all the other jobs that I've done as well. Outside of work, I have a background producing and directing theatre. I started doing technical things, sort of lighting and sound as a teenager, and then sort of moved into the production side of things, producing, being on theatre committees, and then more recently directing, which is something I really enjoy.
Very cool. Do you do any acting as well?
I'm really good at spotting what my talents are, and being on stage and remembering lines is definitely not one of my talents. I did appear once in a show. The director decided that as I was the stage manager, I could pop in, say one line, and take something off stage. I'm not sure that I ever got the line correct. It was just one line. But I think, yeah, when I stand on stage and the lights, I sort of freeze up. So, no, I am definitely a behind the scenes in the shadows sort of person.
Do you remember the line?
Nope. to be fair, it was a person wrapped up in a package, sort of like a dead body wrapped up in a package. So it was quite a lot to deal with, and I had to wheel them off and, you know, not drop them, and, you know.
Oh yeah.
A lot going on.
Well, I think I'm a writer as well, and I've taken a couple of acting classes, and it's good to sort of have that experience to know what you're asking actors to do.
I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I mean, these actors up on the stage are like, they're having to remember lines and blocking and props. And I mean, there's just so much that goes into the periphery of all of it. And it all sort of has to alchemize, if that's a word. It's like an alchemy kind of thing and come together in unison. So it's probably good to do a little bit.
It's good to have a go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, please tell us about the Pump House Theater. What is the mission of the company or the overall goal?
So the Pump House Theater is a really, we're a performing arts venue. I can go back into some history of the Pump House. That might be helpful.
Sure.
So we're based on a lake. It's Lake Pupuki, which is a freshwater lake in Auckland here. It was formed many thousands of years ago by two volcanic eruptions. So it's actually the crater of a volcano. It's filled with water and it's very nice. Back in the early 1900s, there was no fresh water source for the local residents. And so they built this water pumping station, steam-powered water pumping station on the banks of the lake, in what is now the Pump House Theatre. So the building that we are in is sort of over 100, must be getting up to 130 years old now, which for context in New Zealand is quite old. It's always interesting going overseas and seeing sort of buildings that are 1,000 years old, and you know, we think that 100 years old is old. So this building sort of eventually in the sort of 20s the water pumping station was decommissioned and moved away, and so the building sort of sat derelict for a while, and it was going to be demolished and the land sold off. But some local arts enthusiasts, including a woman who'd been over to the United States and seen other conversions of old buildings into art centres, had this idea to convert the Pump House into an art centre. And so they lobbied the local council, the local government, and said, you know, let us look after it. We'll do it up and run it as an art centre. Just don't demolish it. And so that was eventually what was decided, and that was in 1969. And so this group basically fundraised with bake sales and had weekend working bees and everything that needed to be done, they did it. And in 1977, the Pump House opened as a community arts venue for the performing arts. And at that time, it had a small art gallery as well. And really, the focus of it at the time was to provide a local space in the community for anyone who wanted to perform. You didn't have to be a professional or anything like that or belong to a particular company. If you had a show you wanted to do, you could come along to the Pump House and put it on. And that's really the philosophy that we continue with today. We try and program a little bit, and maybe we can talk about that later on, but basically, if we've got space in the calendar and if you've got the funding to cover the venue rental costs, we'll try and find you a time when you can come and perform your show. And that could be anything from Shakespeare, which is what we've got starting at the moment, right through to slam poetry. We tend to attract sort of smaller acoustic musician type things, improv, stand-up comedy in Mandarin, anything you can think of, we'll take. And one of my, every so often we'll get one of our more senior patrons will say, oh, that was awful, I'm never coming back if you're going to show things like that. And what I, great pride in me, I'm saying, great, come back next week, we'll have something entirely different. And I think that's really the focus. So we're just trying to continue. And again, really proud of the fact we opened our doors in May 1977, and we've worked continuously and been open continuously through then, despite all sorts of, funding challenges the C thing that happened over the last 2 years, which we try not to talk about anymore. We've still managed to survive and thrive.
That's excellent. And okay, I have a comment and then I have a really small question for you. First of all, I'm looking at your website and this property is beautiful. I mean, there's this gorgeous shot of the body of water and there's like a pier and these two very, very like pristine, just beautifully taken care of buildings. I can't believe that anybody would want to, I don't know, get rid of it. I mean, it's you know, kudos to the lady who came out and said, hey, look, let's not do that. Let's take a breath and see if we can't find another use for these buildings. It's just such a beautiful structure and property. Now, my question is this. What is a working bee?
Oh, right. Yeah, I thought this might be a problem. I have some American friends, and sometimes I say things, and they look at me like I'm mad. Basically, everyone comes together over the weekend, and they work on a maintenance project, like it might be, replacing the roof or something like that. I don't know maybe there isn't a, sort of a community, construction community, sort of clean, tidy up, that kind of thing.
You know, we could use a few working bees out here in America, that's for sure. and I believe for the most part that, that we have them here and there. I mean, my husband, who's been involved in smaller theaters has participated in those, or there's more of like a delegation of jobs that are ongoing, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's working the box office or cleaning the restrooms or something like that. That's how it goes. I mean, you really have to sort of share, I don't want to say the burden, but share the responsibility of taking care of things. I mean, you don't just walk into a theater and put on costumes and everything is wonderful. There's so much peripheral stuff that goes on around all of that. And I think, you know, the average theater goer maybe probably doesn't necessarily they come in, they sit down, they see actors on stage and everything has just happened magically to them. And that's sort of the way it should be in a way.
Yeah. I think one of the nice things about the Pump House is we regularly get people who sort of pop in and they, you know, they've got visitors over from wherever and they're showing them around. And these might be people who are now in their 40s and 50s, who as children with their parents used to come to those working bees and those sort of do that work. And so, and or, you know, they'll come with their 80-year-old mum and, oh, well, I remember chipping the concrete off those bricks and I painted those beams. And there's a real sense of ownership and pride in those people who help to save and restore the building and get it up and running. And there's certainly no shortage of those people who keep an eye on things and are definitely not afraid to pop in and tell us quite robustly if they think we're doing the right thing or not. Yeah. But I think having that level of engagement and that affection within the community for something they've created is really good. And it does help us, keep on track and make sure that we're accommodating as many aspects of the community as we can.
That's great. So it feels like the community has almost a sense of ownership over the theater company.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Very much so. Keith way that we operate is we rent the space to people to come and perform. So we don't produce the shows ourselves. Our role is to host other producers who come in and use the space. But it's quite interesting. And talking to all of those producers and the teams that they bring in, they all feel like it's their home and it's the space that it's a space they own, for want of a better word, or it's their home base. And it was, I mean, I used to feel that same way as well when I was involved in shows at the Pump House before I worked there. And, you know, we knew other things happened, but really it was where we were based. And everyone feels that way. And it's quite interesting to have the sort of stream of 40 or 50 hirers who come through each year, all telling me that this feels like their home, and this is, a space which is for them. So that's really good, again, to have that level of affection and engagement from the people who are able to use the space to present their stories and their shows.
It sounds like, in addition to utilizing the space, they probably attend a lot of the productions and other events that you have going on at the theater as well, right?
Yeah, we do get a big crossover. And essentially we have a nice sort of mix of producers who come through and present things, so that we'll have people who are, you know, we've got a particular group, Timbre Theatre Company, who concentrate on shows for children and sort of trying to inspire the next generation of theatre lovers. And very often they'll come along with their grandparents, because the grandparents have been to see a show by Tadpole Productions, who tend to focus on a bit more of that sort of, traditional community theatre, sort of the farce or that kind of thing. And so as the grandparents love theatre, they bring the grandkids to inspire them. And so it's really helps to build those family connections and just that love of theatre throughout the age groups as well.
That's great. That really espouses the concept of theater being for everyone. When I say that, I mean like everyone to see it, to love it, to perform it, to sponsor it, to all aspects, and to have a community around you that really just partakes in all of those different ways and helps is so inspiring to hear that. Let's talk about your projects, the projects that come to you. Is there a selection process? Do you vet the pieces that people are proposing for the various stages and performance areas? Or is it pretty much like, if you bring it, we will, and you've got the money, then we will go ahead and do it?
Yeah, so it is closer to, if you want to do it, we'll find a way. We certainly don't vet people. In fact, we've had people come perform at our space where other venues have said, I'll go and do it somewhere else, and if we like it, then you can come here and do it. Which I think is a bit rude, but to some extent as well, I think it's a success for us that if people come and put something on at the Pump House and they grow an audience and they get popular or too big for our space, because we only got 190 seats, which is, you know, fairly small compared to some theatres, and they're able to grow and progress, that's a success for us. I mean, they're people who perhaps wouldn't have had that opportunity to grow otherwise. So we tend to work on historically, we've worked on a first-come, first-served basis. So you ring up and you're looking for some dates. If those dates are free in the calendar, they're all yours. What we found with COVID was we had a lot of cancellations. And what we did for our producers during COVID when we were in lockdown is we allowed people to transfer their dates to another time in the year. So we didn't... we didn't keep their deposits or anything like that. We just booked them in at a later date. But of course, that meant that not only did we fill up the calendar with new people wanting to book, but also with people who had booked already for the last couple of years and sort of really struggled. And we're still, at the end of last year, still presenting. In fact, we've got something coming up at the end of February this year, which I think is the third try they've had at it. Might even be the fourth by the time they got their funding sorted out at actually doing the show because of these delays with COVID. And so we've tried to move our process to a little bit more of expressions of interest. And then once we've got everyone's interest as to who wants to do a show, we'll then try and fit as many people in as we can. And that's allowed us to be a little bit more I wouldn't say selective, but to try and prioritise some underrepresented groups or art forms that are perhaps not as represented in our program as they might otherwise be, who may miss out just because they're not organised enough or because, you know, they have to wait for funding to come through before they can ring and book a venue compared to other groups who maybe have a steady source of funding. So they can get in early. So, yeah, we're hoping that the expression of interest process is going to level the playing field a little bit and allow us to continue to expand the diversity of what we present.
That's excellent. Yeah, a lot of people sort of had a backlog of commitments that they either, if it's their own company, that they still need to get up on stage, or if it's, you know, other promises to other people, and lots of things had to be shifted around for COVID. It was something that the theater world, I don't think, was ready for at all. It was, you know, it was horrible. I have a whole series called Act Two Places about interviewing a lot of different theaters from America, from London, from Ireland, from Tel Aviv. I mean, just all over the world, and how they handle it. If anybody wants to go back and listen to that, it's actually won 4 awards. So, all right, enough of bragging about myself. Now I see that you have 3 different theaters. You have the Genevieve, the Croft. Am I saying that right? Or Beecroft?
We tend to emphasize the B, so Beecroft.
Beecroft, okay. And Auditorium. You have the Cole Bunker Studio, and you also have an outdoor amphitheater. I want to ask a question, and then I would really like for you to talk a little bit about each one. But my question is, since we're on COVID, and then I promise no more. I know it's like the C word you said that cannot speak its name. With your outdoor amphitheater, did that become a little more popular as COVID regulations started easing up a little bit? I know a lot of people went to outdoor. And a lot of people were really lucky that they had this kind of a venue, but they could switch their productions too. Now, granted, there was still masking and things like that, but it was supposedly a lot safer. Did that become a big asset during that time?
It did get more use, yes. It wasn't hugely more popular only because it's uncovered. So there's an element of risk with the weather. That really only gets heavily used at that sort of in our summer. So now we're just at the moment preparing for our Auckland Shakespeare in the Park season. So that's going to open on Saturday our time.
Excellent.
Tomorrow. But yes, we did see more people interested in using it. We could space people out. I think once we spaced out all the seats, we could fit probably 250 people in there. But because of the capacity limits that the government had put in place, with all the spacing, we could only really fit the 100 max. But it did offer us an opportunity to sort of say, well, actually, we do have a space. You can come and do things, and we can be outdoors and safer.
That's a big plus. A lot of people just went to, like in America, a lot of people just went to regular parks and, you know, people really had to get creative. I know that you have a program called the Monologue Collab Program.
Mm-hmm.
I got the hint or the gist of it that actually went virtual as a program for people to sort of keep up their skills and sort of stay in the headspace of theater. Talk about that.
Yeah, so, well, that actually came out of the first lockdown that our country went into. Because we're not a producing theatre, we don't have actors who are attached to us. We couldn't move our production online or anything like that. So we thought we'd try this. We'd reach out to the community, see if people wanted to collaborate on something, and I suppose unsurprisingly it was very popular. So everyone involved is a an actor or in somehow associated with the Pump House community. It may be that they're actors or that their partners are actors and they wanted to do something. And it was a way that we could encourage people to stay creative while they were, you know, perhaps by themselves or you know, living with housemates, rather than coming out to the theatre and performing. And so everyone was assigned like a line or a couple of lines from a monologue, and they filmed it, and we collated them together and published them, and it was really popular. So that's something we've done, well, through both lockdowns in New Zealand. Now we've done that, and it, yeah, it's always interesting to see how creative people are and what we get, because we don't give them any direction or anything like that. So you interpret, you know. We tend to choose monologues that are fairly well known and that people will be familiar with. We say you choose how you present it, and we mash it all together and create something great.
So that's really interesting. So it's not just like an actor going on camera and doing like a monologue start to finish. You sort of chop up the monologues and so like 8-10 actors will be doing one specific monologue?
Yeah, I think each one, off the top of my head, I think we had at least 10 actors involved in each one. And they're still on our website. They're all hosted on YouTube, so you can go watch them all and see all the sort of crazy creative things people came up with.
Wow. Okay, I've never heard of it of like a virtual project being presented like that. I mean, there have been monologue series, there have been plays and readings and stuff on virtual, particularly COVID based programs, but I've never heard of it like that. That's really cool. I love that. Who thought of that? Was that you?
I don't think I can claim credit for it. I think our marketing and box office manager Meg Andrews and our community engagement person Mags Delaney both came up with ways of moving our what we do online and engaging people while they were only able to engage online. So our Creative Talks program, which we can talk about later as well, also moved online with Mags doing the interviews in a Zoom session, much like we are today, rather than in person. And so between the two of them, they sort of worked on Meg sort of took the lead on the monologues. She's an actor and director as well as working for us. And Mags took the lead on the sort of the creative talks and seminar side of things. And so, yeah, that was one of the things we sort of brainstormed as a team about how we can stay engaged and connected and remind people that the Pump House is still there, even if you can't come and see us.
Now, is this the same Meg Andrews who was an intern and wrote a really lovely sort of letter on your website? Am I getting that right?
So I think Meg posted that. So the intern, our most recent intern, Lena from Germany, she wrote a nice farewell letter, but I think Meg posted that. But yes, so Meg's worked with us for a couple of years now.
Oh, wow.
Looks after our box office and the promotion that we do to assist our producers in getting the word out about their shows.
Wow, so it's the same person?
Yeah. So cool. One of the things that I think is beneficial for us is most of the people who work for us are creative in some way as well. They might be directors, producers, stage managers, actors, writers, whatever, they have that interest in theatre and passion for theatre, and we can offer them employment, you know, a day job at a theatre, which is always a great thing. Sure. That day job might not be terribly creative, but it allows them to kind of feed off everyone's energy and involvement and be inspired, and then, you know, when we need to be creative, then we've got some people with those skills on the team, and we can sit down and say, right, this is the challenge. How can we overcome it? And, you know, we pull together all those great skills that creative people have that, you know, are hard to define on a resume, but, you know, you can sit down and give theatre people a problem and they'll solve it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think when there is a problem, I've said this many times, when there's a problem or what feels like an impossibility, presented to theater people is when they become their most like genius creative, in my opinion. They have to think, I hate this phrase because it's overused, but they have to think out of the box and they have to get really super creative. And all of a sudden you're watching this production and there's this like genius idea to get a point across on stage. And it's, I think that that's what I found. And that's what I found in all the theater, a lot of the theater that I've seen. Would you agree with that?
I think it's, we see it every day because every new producer comes with their own challenges, or they, you know, they turn up and just and figure out we don't have as much wing space as we thought, and so they have to kind of reimagine their set or lighting or whatever. You know, it's one of the big things we do is to help people problem solve around what they want to do versus what they can do within the space and the budget that they've got.
Wow, that's great. And I love that there are sort of that you just mentioned, like almost like gateway positions into the creative teams, you know, show up and let's, you know, you might have to sell tickets with this particular thing, but let's sort of get the vibe and see if we're vibing together. And if you, this is something that's of interest to you. It reminds me of Ruth Gordon. She had this quote from, I don't know, I read it on IMDb, I'm sure, but she basically said that she went to a theater company and she said, I just stayed there and I did anything. I did anything and I did everything. Obviously, this is not verbatim. And I figured if I stayed there long enough, they'd eventually give me a part. And they did.
I mean, that's cool. Sort of what we did with our intern, Lena. So she was with us from October to Christmas in 2022. And we didn't really have a role for her. We've had interns come before, but we said, well, you can be reception, you can answer the phones, or you can work in the box office or whatever. We didn't really have a role for Lena. So what we said to her was, look, come along. We will find you things to do. We'll roster you into box office when we need you. We will offer you to the various producers coming in if they need a spare pair of hands or someone to take photos or to help out backstage or whatever. Or if, you know, we've got flyers and, you know, someone wants us to take flyers out around the local shops to put in windows, you know, if as things come in, we'll offer them to you. If you're available and interested, you can do them. And I think that worked really well. She sort of really threw herself into everything, which, I mean, it still staggers me. She came from a very small town in Bavaria in Germany. And no theater, about 300 people living there. And she flew to the other side of the world. And within a couple of weeks, she's out walking through the streets, going in and asking, hey, can we put a poster up for this show in your window? I think that's incredibly brave. But again, it's theater, right? I mean, that's, you just got to jump in and give it a go. And, you know, I dare say she enjoys some things and not others. But I think she had a really good time experiencing what it can be to work in a theater.
That's outstanding. And oftentimes when people are in those positions, it's like they find their tribe. They find that this group of people who are interested in theater just like them, and it can just open up so much in your brain, honestly. Because I come from a family that, you know, I love theater, obviously, and I have a family who likes theater. They see what I produce sometimes, and but they have, none of them are actually, well, one of them is, but are really like theater people, if you will, you know, per se. So you get somebody who is from a family like that, who goes into a theater, always had it in them, and it's great. It's miraculous, in my opinion. So kudos to you guys for doing that and helping that along. That's amazing. Tell us about the various production processes that you experience, because it seems like so varied with everything that you have going on at the facility.
Yeah. So we have a variety of producing production companies that come through. Some of them are they are professional theatre companies. They're well funded. They're, you know, employ people on a full time or contract basis to do the various production roles. You know, stage management and marketing and production management and so on. For them, our role is to make sure everything works and is clean and tidy, and basically get out of their way and let them do their thing, and sort of work in a way that we're supporting them. I mean, very often I describe our role as the host or the venue management as being a bit like Batman. We sort of hide in the shadows, keeping an eye on things. If there's a crisis or a problem, we appear, we solve it, and then we just, you know, slink back into the shadows again until the next time. So that's very much what we do with the professional companies and some of the more community theatre-based companies where, you know, everyone's a volunteer and no one's getting paid for their efforts, but their experience, say they've done this for 20, 30, 40 years and they know what they're doing. And again, we can just lead them to it. Then there are others who they've got an idea. There's something that they want to try. They don't really know what it means to put on a show, but they've got a script or they've got a plan or something like that. And that's where we get a little bit more sort of as a coach or a mentor, and whether that's with marketing and promotion or ticketing or health and safety or you know, technical side of things. And that's where we'll try and put in some assistance around that to get them over the line. Sometimes it's to get them to the point where they actually go on stage. Sometimes it's just helping around the specifics. So, you know, I've got a show, I know how to put on a show, but I really don't know how to promote it. So can we have some help with that? And so we've got some resources and some expertise within our staff around how to promote a show or how to write a health and safety plan or something like that. And we can kind of pick and match where we need to do that. And everyone's sort of on that spectrum, really, from one end to the other. Some of our hirers, they're just there for one day. They might be a musician or something like that, or a stand-up comedian. And really, we just put on staff. We have, you know, a venue supervisor who, you know, looks after health and safety and makes sure everyone's okay. We have our ushers. We have our technical staff who come in. And the person stands on stage, does their thing, and we make sure it just goes smoothly. So that's sort of probably the most hands-on approach that we take, right through to, here's the key, here's an alarm code, we've checked your health and safety plan, off you go, let us know if there are any problems.
Wow, impressive. It's amazing what being around for 100 years plus will do for your systems, huh?
Yeah. it helps.
It doesn't it, though? It's that time to develop. No, that's great, and it's so nice that you have, you know, you can offer up those various resources. I remember when David and I put our play at the Flash on for a reading, we went to a facility like yours and we had to talk to management about finding us a stage manager and, you know, a lighting person and all that just for like a sort of a like a showcase performance. And without those resources, we would have been lost. So as somebody who does occasionally produce their own theater, that is such a huge plus. You know, I probably don't have to tell you that, but I'm just saying it's so helpful.
It gives us some flexibility around how much it costs people to put something on as well. So we operate a process whereby if you can bring in your own team to do the ushering and the sort of the front of house, we'll provide you with the health and safety briefing and, you know, the instructions on where all the, you know, torches are and everything. But you can bring in your own people to do that if you want to. Or we will bring in our staff, but you will need to pay for our staff's time. And so we offer sort of a base level. And then if you want extra support on top of that in terms of a technical person or a stage manager, we can arrange it, but it increases the price. Or you can bring in your own person and then you don't have to pay us. You can pay them or maybe they'll volunteer or whatever. We just keep an eye on things and make sure that people are operating safely, that they're following the rules. Health and safety is a big thing. So New Zealand went through a big health and safety review a few years ago now, and it's made it slightly more challenging in sort of areas where there are volunteers involved who are sort of covered by the health and safety legislation, but also sort of not. Right. And so we took the view that we would, you know, regardless of whether you're a volunteer or a paid person, if you fall off our catwalk, it's going to hurt. So everyone should follow the same health and safety rules, regardless of their employment status.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's even gotten more so heightened, you know, with COVID-19. I said I wasn't going to say it again, and I'm sorry. I promise that's the last time that you bring it.
Honestly, it's just part of work now, because even the shows that are on now, there's still the issue. So in New Zealand, if you contract COVID-19, you have to isolate at home for 7 days. Mm-hmm. And so if you're the lead in a play, or not even the lead in a play, because again, a lot of our volunteer productions, that, you know, they don't have understudies or anything like that. So that can put the play in jeopardy. And the government has put in place some funding support. So if the lead in your, well, you have to apply before the event. But if the lead of your play is unable to perform because of COVID, you can claim some assistance to pay for costs that you can't recover. But it's still a big risk and you know, still a concern for a lot. So I think it's going to be with us for a bit longer. We're still encouraging people to wear masks. They're not legally required to, but it's, you know, we sit people in what is a relatively small room for 3 hours at a time. And it, you know, the audience can be 50% over 65. You know, maybe it's an idea to wear a mask if you think that helps. But yeah, it's been interesting to navigate, and yeah, I don't see it. It's just going to be part of life for at least another couple of years, I think, for us anyway. I think, you know, other businesses there's probably less so, but for what we do, yeah.
Yeah, there's an intimacy to theater that I think really lends itself to being a lot more cautious. Just because people are, you know, dressing you and in your face and doing your makeup and kissing and all of that. So it's,
yeah, I think, yeah, please. Yeah, continue. One of the shows I'm involved with at the moment, we've, you know, just simple things like sharing makeup is something that, you know, we can't really do that anymore. Everyone needs their own little sort of, you know, thing of foundation. We can't really share makeup brushes or makeup or anything like that, which probably never should have done in the first place, if we're being honest. It's all a bit weird, but it helps, I suppose, to put in place those processes to make things slightly more hygienic.
Wow, that's, I had not heard of the makeup aspect. That's a really, really interesting thing, and I've never heard that with all the people that I've interviewed. That's actually, and that's, I mean, you say it, it's like, well, yeah, of course, but it's those little details that I'm glad you're sharing, because, you know, maybe somebody doesn't realize that and they're listening to this show and they're thinking, you know, maybe we should be like New Zealand and not share makeup, which again, I think is probably a good rule of thumb anyway, but I don't wear makeup, yeah. So I don't know.
So, no, I mean, maybe it's just a community theater thing, but yeah, it just, you know, someone would turn up with the tub of makeup that belongs to the theater, and if you need something, you take it. But who knows these days?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah.
Now I feel like, I'm not sure if these are like peripheral programs that you offer or other people have come in and they're utilizing your space. But can you tell us about your creative talks and your drama improvisation workshop? Are those yours, or is somebody bringing that in, and how do those work?
Well, it's a combination. So we have a community engagement role within our organization. They're a really important part, and that's well, I was gonna say that's led by Mags Delaney Moffat. She's the only person in the department, so I guess she does lead it. But and her job really is to create opportunities for people to engage and take part in the arts beyond sitting in a dark theater watching other people do things on stage. So one of our core parts of that is our creative talks program, which is essentially, it's free talks for audiences to come and hear from creative people about what a creative life is like. Sometimes that takes the form of an interview, and Mags will interview the person and you know, ask some questions. Sometimes they'll have a presentation, or they'll be, you know, a talker to start with, and they'll talk. But generally, they talk through their creative life and how that works, how they approach creativity. We've had, you know, fairly notable actors and authors within New Zealand anyway, come and talk. We've had intimacy coordinators, directors, you know, you name it, really. And the great thing is, because we have a variety of speakers, we have a variety of things that come out of that. And then, of course, because it's about engagement, it's at the end of the talk, we invite the audience to ask questions, and it becomes a bit more of a conversation, and we sort of all have a cup of tea and a biscuit afterwards, so you can sort of continue to chat. And again, it's an opportunity to come and do something at the theatre when we'd otherwise be dark, so maybe on a Monday night, typically. And sort of just get a bit of a more of an insight into how theatre works, or it doesn't even have to be theatre. Many of our speakers are sort of more broadly artistic. So that's something that we do ourselves, and sort of we're just putting together the program for this year now. The improv classes are a great example of the sort of the community aspect of it. So we were approached by an improv tutor who's visiting New Zealand from the UK. I think he's staying with family, but he sort of saw the theatre, liked what we did, and said, look, I'm here for a few weeks. If you'd like me to do a couple of classes, I don't need payment or anything, but if you've got some people who'd like to learn a bit about improv, happy to do a couple of classes. So we've very, very eagerly taken up his offer. And so we've got a couple of, we've got improv for beginners, and then another one the following week for people who've had a little bit of improv experience, including people who come to the beginners class to move on to the next step. The other thing which we've just finished is our Shakespeare in a Week program, which is again something that Mags runs. So Mags has a background as a teacher and is an absolute Shakespeare fanatic. So she takes young people between the ages of 12 and 18 on a Monday. They are introduced to a Shakespeare play, and on Friday night they present that Shakespeare play to their friends and family in our theatre. And in the meantime, they've done all the blocking, they've learned their lines, they've done all the blocking, they've created some costumes, some props, maybe some scenery, and they do a show at the end of it. And that's really popular as well, and that's what we're seeing now is people who have done Mags's Shakespeare in a Week program are now moving on to our Auckland Shakespeare in the Park shows, and they're auditioning for that and sort of, involved in the adult Shakespeare, if you like. So there's a pathway for Shakespeare lovers to get involved and do a bit more. And again, that's always been a popular one. It's amazing what they come up with at the end of a week.
A week to do a Shakespeare play?
Yeah.
Wow. In acting class, I had to do a Shakespeare monologue one time. It took me 3 weeks just to memorize a monologue. I would hope that people who show up for that sort of have a bit of, like, at least a leadership person who has, like, an understanding of what the play is about. Or is it, or do they go in and it's like, okay, you're doing this play? Are they assigned the plays, or do they bring the plays to the program that they want to do?
So Mags will usually decide what play she wants to do before we sort of launch the workshop. Uh-huh. We tend to launch it sort of October, so that we've got plenty of time for people to sign up, and then it happens in the first or second week of January, because that's during the summer school holidays here. So it's sort of a school holiday program for us. And so people who come know what the play is going to be, and I suggest that most of the people who are involved are Shakespeare fans. They're high school age, but and there's ongoing discussions in New Zealand about how relevant Shakespeare is in the curriculum, and do you still need to study it, and that sort of thing. So some of them get the opportunity to do to study Shakespeare at school. Others don't. There are some who are homeschooled, and so for them it's an opportunity you can engage with performing Shakespeare as opposed to learning about Shakespeare in a home environment. So most of them are familiar with the play, but when they arrive on the day, they don't have their parts, they don't have the script or anything like that. So it is something that they work with during the week and through multiple rehearsals and so on. The scripts are trimmed to accommodate size of cast and that sort of thing, of course. So we're not doing a full five act, Much Ado About Nothing. But it is nevertheless, it's Shakespeare as it's written.
That's like very, very similar to like a lot of drama camps. You know, you're doing like three or four different shows over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or however long you're there. I've never been to one, but it's my understanding that they move fast and you have to be prepared. And that's great, because I think that one of the things when I'm putting on a show that I look for is preparation, work habits, and you know, does this person, did they study their lines last night? Did they, you know, did they come prepared for what needed to be done that particular day of rehearsal? That, as a little bit about me, that affects me quite a bit. I mean, I'm the kind of person who, like, auditions will sit there and write, didn't show up with their sides or showed up late, because, you know, and so this is, I think that a director, sorry, I'm a bit bescattered on this, but a director that has directed one of my plays said it very, very well. You know, we're not looking for the absolute most blow me away talented person, because there's going to be a handful of those who are really like killing the role in an audition. I'm also looking for the person that I know that I could spend 6 weeks with and, yeah, and deal, exactly. And you know, that I know is going to show up and be prepared and have excellent work habits, because trust me, it's backfired on us before. But so that is great. I mean, that is so good for these students, because it's teaching them a lot. And it may be like a bit of a baptism by fire by some of them, but that's the way it goes. And that's what they want to do. That's, you know.
Yeah. And some of them are not performers. I mean, Mags gets feedback from parents who are, you know, amazed at what she's been able to do. You know, the kids who are very shy and reserved, or perhaps a little bit on the spectrum or something like that. And then to see them after a week on stage with other people performing, being a character, being, you know, expressive, can be quite emotional for those parents as well. So again, it's a way that drama and theatre, it's not just about entertainment, it's life skills and development and all that sort of thing.
Well, so many of the educational people or people in education that that I interview say that is just so wonderful to see. It's just watching someone just sort of open up in that way. It's like one of the biggest rewards of being a theater teacher or a theater professor. So that's really cool. I'm so impressed that's occurring there, because you're developing new talent and it's so helpful. And sometimes there, I'm not to be overly dramatic, but sometimes that can save a kid's life you know, because of that connection that they make. So that's so awesome. Tell me, what are some of the challenges facing the Pump House Theater? Are there certain things that you are constantly working on, or is there anything right now? I mean, other than the C word.
Yeah. So I mean, there's two. One of them's probably a challenge of our own making. So, for example, the Shakespeare in a Week is incredibly popular, and we get, can you do it every year? Can you do it every school holiday period? And unfortunately, because we're so busy as a venue, we can't. We've got people already booked in, and sort of the spaces I think if you were custom building a theatre, you'd put in soundproofing and, you know, make sure there was separation of your various spaces. But because, again, one of the challenges of being a reclaimed building is that it is what it is. So we can't tend to do multiple things at once, which we could definitely do a lot more in the education space and so on if we had more space to do that and sort of more time in the calendar and better management of that. So it's something we're looking at. It's a difficult one because, you know, people, they're doing a show for 2 weeks, they need to build a set, they need to have it on stage. We can't really let people perform on somebody else's set or use somebody else's dressing room space. So the other big challenge for us this year is going to be around funding. So our operating costs are covered around about a third by our local council through their operating, so for our very local neighbourhood level council funding. About a third come from other grants and donations and so on, then the final third from the venue rental cost. So it's quite heavily subsidised venue rental for our community groups and non-professionals. We have a new mayor in Auckland. He's quite a business-friendly mayor and doesn't really see the point in libraries and the arts and that sort of thing. He's told our local community board to cut funding, and that could see us lose all of our funding from the council or about a third of our funding overall. Now, we know that our local politicians don't want to do that. They're incredibly supportive of us and all the other arts centres around in our neighbourhood. And they actually get really good value for money because the model that they've adopted some time ago is that instead of opening up their own theatre as a council and, you know, as a public amenity, they've given us money to run ours. And so for what they give us, so the funding level they give us, they could probably afford to hire one staff member.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
For something they ran themselves. So they get amazing value for money from the funding that they give us. But nevertheless, they've been told you might need to cut that funds. And by the way, all the regional arts grant funding that we do, we're going to stop doing that as well. So that if that goes ahead, so this is the mayor's proposal. It will be finalized and then come out for public submissions. But if that goes ahead, that could see us in either with a cut or a complete elimination of our operating funding from Auckland Council. And then on top of that, because Auckland Council owns the land and the building that we are in, we don't pay commercial rents or anything like that for that space. So if cost savings have to be found around maintenance and buildings and so on, we could end up having to pay more for the maintenance and the ongoing cost of the building, in addition to funding cuts on the other side. So it's a challenge. It's not a great way to start the year. But we've been through this before. And as I say, we have really strong support from our local neighbourhood level representatives up into council. I mean, if we have an event at the Pump House. So we have two sort of local representatives on Auckland Council for sort of Auckland as a whole in our local neighbourhood. If we have an event at the Pump House, like our annual general meeting or an opening of something, they will usually both come, which is absolutely fantastic. It's not the level of support I would expect from a politician, especially, you know, we tend to see a lot of people come and to those things in an election year when it's good for them to be seen out and about and at these community events. But we will see them come along, you know, if they're free and we've got an event on, they will usually pop in and say hello. So confident that we've got their support. Yeah, not so much about the mayor. We don't really see the mayor very much. So that's going to be a challenge to see what happens over the next 12 months and how that affects our funding.
Do you take donations from the public? And I mean, can people go to a particular page and donate?
Yeah, so on our website, we can take donations online via our credit card or something like that, or we've got bank details as well. And that's something that we will probably have to publicize a little bit more, shall we say. We don't get... It's interesting, again, we talk about challenges. There was a lot of public support around establishing the Pump House Theatre and starting it, saving the building. Now it's up and running and it's going very well. A lot of the people who did that initial work are wanting to take a step back. They want to enjoy the theatre, but they don't want to be coming out and doing, you know, bake sales and fundraising anymore. They just want to relax and retire. But because the theatre is so busy and changes in sort of society as well, we don't have as many people volunteering to sort of come and run donation drives or go out and seek sponsorship and that sort of thing as we perhaps have in the past. We find ourselves sort of a little bit of a victim of our own success, really, because we are seen to be thriving and doing so well. It's sort of seen that we're not as in need of support as maybe other causes might be. And of course, you know, inflation's rife and cost of living and all that sort of thing going on in society as well. We don't want to... It's difficult. So I worked for the government. So I sort of worked in the social sector around financial support for people. And so I'm aware of how much people struggle in the community and how important things like food banks and social services are. And so as much as I think the arts is critically important to a community and a society, food and housing is also critically important. And if people have limited money for donations and things, getting people off the street and food in people's stomachs is more important than having a nice theatre. But they're all important.
Wow. Well, it's nice that you have that type of perspective. But still, this is, I think, in my opinion, it feels necessary that there is focus placed upon Pump House Theater and its future success, because we talked about it earlier and you said that there is a tremendous amount of community ownership towards this theater. And so I think that it's very, very valid for you to put that into, I mean, maybe not as high as, you know, housing and food, but it's up there. I mean, if there's one thing we found out during, sorry, I'm bringing it up again, COVID, is that it was a human need that people have theater, that they have entertainment, that we don't just want to sit in our houses and watch Netflix. As much as I love TV and can watch a lot of it, you know, people need more than that. They need theater. They need sporting events. We need to get out and be a community. So, I appreciate you putting the perspective on it. But my opinion is that the mayor needs to maybe shift his paradigm. I mean, granted, I don't live there, but I could just tell him, knock it off, and give these people some money.
Unfortunately, I think his perspective is not that the money should be better spent on housing and food. From what I can tell, he wants to pay down debt so that the interest rates come down and then they can borrow some more for other things. And he wants to, you know, not put up people's property taxes and that sort of thing. So it's not like he's got some big altruistic plan. It's just that, you know, he ran on the the thing of balancing the budget, no rates rises and no property tax increases. And in order to do that, he has to cut services. And of course, as usual, the arts are the first one on the block. We haven't attracted much attention from him yet, so probably doesn't know we're there. But he's certainly been saying some things in the media about, you know, the Auckland Art Gallery, and because it always comes down to then your personal taste. I didn't like this, so the art gallery is a waste of time. Or, you know, this show is something that we don't like, so we shouldn't have theatres. That tends to be the rhetoric around it in the past. So we'll see how it plays out.
It's time for you to shine the bat symbol of the Pump House Theatre and make him pay attention. That's what I think.
Absolutely.
Tell us about your most current season at the Pump House Theatre. What's going on there right now?
So in just over 24 hours, Anthony and Cleopatra will open out in our outdoor amphitheatre. It's the first of the two shows in our Shakespeare in the Park season this year. The second one being Merry Wives of Windsor, which opens Tuesday next week, our time. I'm directing Merry Wives of Windsor with my other hat on. So this is what I do when I'm not at work, is involved in this theatre company called Shoreside Theatre. And we've been producing Shakespeare in the Park at the Pump House for about 27, 28 years now. So that's what's coming up. That's going to run for 26 performances over 4 weeks. And those two shows alternate on different nights. We've got probably, I think each cast is about 20 people. And again, they range from professional, proper film actors right through to people who have, this might be their first time on stage. So it's a real community production. All the costumes are sort of handmade. The costume designer for Merry Wives of Windsor has just received a nomination for her work in last year's Shakespeare in the Park. She's been nominated for Best Costume Design in the Auckland Community Theatre Awards.
Wow, props to her.
Absolutely. And she also performs in the plays. So, you know, she does double duty as costume designer, makes most of the costumes, and then also performs and learns her lines. So, but, you know, going back to what we're talking about previously about sort of the audiences of the future, she's a really good example. She used to come along when she was 8, 9, 10 years old to watch our Shakespeare in the Park productions. And she's gone on through high school and you know, learned more about sewing, and she's done a costume design degree. And now she's, you know, even before she'd done the degree, she's actively involved in the show. So she's gone from audience member to sort of a key leading part in the shows. Again, exactly what we're here for. So yeah, that's Shakespeare in the Park. It's looking to be a pretty good season. After the last couple of years, we're a little limited on our numbers for various restrictions and so on. So we're selling pretty well, and weather's looking not too bad. I should point out perhaps that it is summer in New Zealand at the moment.
Yeah.
And we can get up to 24, 25 degree Celsius during the day. So you can have really nice hot summers, a nice summer evening. Because we're in that park by the lake, people very often will come down and have a picnic by the lake and then wander over to see the show at 7:30 just as the sun goes down. As I said, the amphitheatre outside isn't covered, so on a nice clear night, all the stars and the moon come up. It's lovely.
That's outstanding. That's wonderful. My husband was in Merry Wives of Windsor. He played Dr. Caius.
Right, yes.
And he can still rattle off his French monologue like and this is like something like 25, 26 years ago when he was in it. You can still say the whole entire thing, which is
fantastic. Yeah, we've struggled a little bit this year with both players, Anthony and Cleopatra and Merry Wives of Windsor, from a production level with cast availability, because again, COVID. So I think everyone's had some time out with that. because sort of borders are opening up and people can travel, a lot of people have gone overseas to visit family for the first time in 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
So we've missed people for that. And this is, you know, it's one of the challenges of community theatre, right? You know, people want to be in the show, but they've also got a life and children and work and partners. And, you know, we often talk to the cast about, look, if there's other people in your life who have some control or some say in what you do with your time, make sure they know what's happening with your commitment to this production as well, because it is a big commitment. But it's coming together. We'll be ready for opening night. And, yeah, looking forward to another good season and hopefully not too much bad weather.
Outstanding. Okay, I want to wrap up, but very quickly, could you tell me, if you could have 3 wishes for the company, what would they be?
Good question. I think number one is enough funding that we don't need to worry about funding year on year. When we start the year, we are typically 20 to 30 new, well, no, actually close to 50,000 New Zealand dollars, those sort of 25,000, 30,000 US short in our budget. And we have to pick that up by finding more hirers from what we have initially booked, funding applications, donations, that sort of thing. If I won the lottery, I would donate $2 million to the Pump House to put in an investment fund. We could then take out that $50,000 a year and we would be self-sufficient and, you know, for the long term. So that's my wish, $2 million in an investment fund. Number two would be more space so that we could further develop our education programs. I think that there's a desperate need for, need, but also desire for people to come and learn about performing, learn about theatre. And the thing that stops us is just having the space and the being able to fit it in with the other things that we have ongoing. So if we could convince Auckland Council to let us put a building somewhere on our site that was a classroom, I think that would make a big difference. And my third wish would be, I don't know. I think that we continue. One of the things you really notice about the Pump House and about the elderly people who come along, we just, sadly, one of our lifetime members passed away over Christmas. Mm-hmm. And just hearing about her involvement and the stories from when she was involved in the art gallery side of things, you really get the impression that, you know, as the business manager and my team, we are caretakers of the space for the next generation. And I joke with the, you know, we get the sort of the old ladies who come in and tell us how well or not we're doing things. Encourage my team, make sure you're taking notes so that in 40 years time, you can be the person who comes and harasses the manager and says, in my day, we put the rubbish bins over there. that sort of thing. So I think, you know, it's been here for, well, the building's 130 years old. The theatre's been going since 1977. So we're coming up for 50 years as a performing arts centre. You know, I'd love it to be here for another 150 years, continuously showcasing local stories by local people with a great diversity and a great range of performances, and a stepping stone for actors and people who are inspired to take part in any sort of performing arts.
Please give our audience your social media information so that they can keep up with the Pump House Theatre. And in the future, when your donation page is up or promoted, they can donate and help with this.
Yeah, if they go to, so easiest place to find out what we're up to is to go to our website at pumphouse.co.nz. That's P-U-M-P-H-O-U-S-E.co.nz. And yeah, if you would like to donate, you can go to pumphouse.co.nz/donate. And there's plenty of information there on how you can make a donation and support us. And if anyone would like to give us a couple of $1 million for my investment fund, that would be lovely.
I thank you for being on the show. I thank you for being the inaugural show. It was wonderful, wonderful to hear about the Pump House Theater. And you have been absolutely amazing. And I want you to know that I wish you many broken legs for all the wonderful work that you do, for your two upcoming Shakespeare shows, and everything that I know will happen in the future in a very, very positive light for the Pump House Theater. Thanks so much, James, for being on your program as your ticket. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, folks, the 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to my guest, James Bell, business manager of the Pump House Theater in New Zealand. James asked me to mention his Facebook page, so here we go. He is on facebook.com/thepumphousetheater. That's theater with an R-E. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket on the Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them on my landing page at bpn.fm/ypiyt. Your Program Is Your Ticket is also on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket, Twitter at Program Ticket, Instagram at Your Program Is Your Ticket, YouTube at Your Program Is Your Ticket, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and the UK-based theater platform Thespi. FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. Another quick note of thanks to the Communicator Awards for honoring Your Program Is Your Ticket with 4 awards. An award of excellence for individual episodes in the arts and culture category, and 3 awards of distinction. 2 for my Act 2 Places series, 1 in the entertainment category, and 1 in the educational category, and 1 for me in featured host category. Isn't that nice? I'm extremely grateful for the honor and owe it all to my wonderful guests, listeners, and my Broadway Podcast Network family. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer, and go see their shows. Give them all great ratings and reviews, and most important, donate, donate, donate. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And remember, theater is for everyone.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.